My name is Jordan Ross, and thanks for listening to What's Your Limp? I'm an actor and the host of this podcast, but I also happen to have cerebral palsy and scoliosis, resulting in a limp. That limp led to vicious bullying in high school, limited opportunities as an actor, a number of insecurities, and severe depression. However, over time, I slowly learned to open up about my feelings, which showed me that I'm not alone, because the more I opened up, the more others opened up to me. I quickly learned that everyone has a limp, whether it's physical or internal. I stopped seeing my limp as a weakness and began to see it as an asset. And that's the goal of this podcast, is to help others do the same. So, as you listen to my conversations with some of your favorite actors, athletes, singers, and public figures, listen closely, because you might just find out that some of them struggle with the exact same limp as you. So let's all learn to love our limps together. What is up, my fellow limpers? This is your host, Jordan Ross, and thank you for listening to another episode of the What's Your Limp podcast. Now, today I am unbelievably excited to share with you the audio from my first ever live podcast recording, which I did at Arlington Music Hall with my incredible castmates and even better friends, Elizabeth Tavish and Paris Patel, who you might know as Mary Magdalene and Matthew from The Chosen. I also had several other Chosen castmates make surprise guest appearances towards the end of the episode, so be sure to listen for those as well. Now, this is a supersized episode. It is easily the biggest episode I have ever done, so I'm not going to bore you with anything else. I'm just going to jump right into it, and I hope you enjoy my first live podcast recording of What's Your Limp? What's up, my fellow limpers? How are y'all doing? Awesome. Thank y'all so much for coming today. This is my first ever live podcast show, and I am incredibly nervous. So this is, all of you are guinea pigs. I'm trying this out for the very first time. So I appreciate your patience in advance. Before I bring out my special guests, I just wanted to thank a few people. First off, my grandma, who's being seated right now, Mimi. Wave at everyone. So, I have a lot of family and friends here today. My wife, who's somewhere up there with my kids, thank y'all, I love you. She watched the kids while I had slaved away preparing this podcast show for y'all for months, making calls and arrangements, and it helped so much. And also my mom, who, and my Aunt Shelley, and my dad, and my siblings, everyone that helped so much in so many different ways. So thank all of you for being here and for being a part of this. I love y'all. I also want to thank one of What's Your Limp sponsors, Buzzed Bull Creamery out of Grapevine, Texas. There we go. So Buzzed Bull Creamery is a really, really cool ice cream shop, and they have buzzed and non-buzzed ice creams, so you can get your favorite adult beverage infused in the ice cream. So you could get like a graham cracker ice cream with like whiskey or things like that. Or if you don't want to have any alcohol in your ice cream, they do ice cream for all ages. So you can bring the family, bring the kids. They have really, really cool combinations of flavors. It's all, you know, natural ingredients. And it's infused together with liquid nitrogen. It's a really cool place, a really cool atmosphere, and it opens within the next month or so. And I will be at the grand opening taking pictures with people and enjoying some ice cream myself. So I'll post more about that on my social media. And on the program you received, on the back, there's a QR code for all of the sponsors. So you can learn more about them there, and I'll talk about the others later on. I think that's about it. Thank you again for coming today. And now we'll get started. It's a really fun night planned. I have two amazing guests that are going to be up here sharing their limps with me and with all of you. And we may have some surprise guests later on, too. And then raise your hand if you filled out a question when you came in. A few people. Okay, cool. So my mom was the one out there getting questions from all of you. So we'll be answering some questions. We may even do some giveaways at some point. There's a lot of really cool stuff. So get ready. But now I'm going to go take a seat over here. I am going to bring out My guests, Elizabeth Tabish and Paris Patel, who you know as Mary Magdalene, and Matthew from The Chosen. Have a seat. So I knew that Liz and Paris would be excellent candidates to be my first two guests for my live show because I know that how much the Chosen fans love them, but also I love them both dearly. They're two of my favorite people, and I'm so glad to have y'all here with me.
Thank you so much for having us for the first live screen recording.
Really,
this is amazing.
Really honored, but also really, really nervous. But
yeah. All of us were saying backstage, or all the three of us were saying that, like, if we were doing a scene and performing, it would have been a lot easier, because then we're not
100%.
Ourselves. Yeah, but this is a lot scarier than being someone else. So
we're ourselves now, you know?
So we'll start with an easy question. Tell me your deepest, darkest secrets.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm just going to... Yeah. Call my agent, and then we'll, you know.
No, so I want to talk a lot about The Chosen, obviously, because...
We're not answering that one?
Yeah, no. I mean, unless you want to. I want to talk a lot about The Chosen because, obviously, so many people here are fans of The Chosen, and we'll get to that. But I usually start by kind of rewinding a little bit and figuring out how we ended up getting to the place we are now. So I'll let you start, Liz, ladies first. But, like... kind of dive into your childhood a bit. You know, like, where'd you grow up? What was childhood like for you? What kind of kid were you? All that fun stuff.
Well, it's funny because my limp is being confronted right now. I was a really shy, shy child, and I still struggle with shyness today, and now being in front of you guys doing this is kind of ironic. But I was really quiet and never quite fit in. I was in, like, Utah and Oklahoma, which was, like, very, very white populations, and I knew I didn't fit in, and I didn't know why, but, like, I look back and I realize why, and I didn't really have that many friends, and, I just kind of kept to myself. I loved academics, I loved the arts, and in kindergarten, my parents came to our final show, and it was like this big musical thing, and I was unrecognizable, they said. I guess I took to the stage really well, and they were like, is that our child? She doesn't talk at home, but she's singing and dancing and very dramatic. And so from there on, I think I found the stage as a type of platform to express myself in a safe way that felt like nobody could either criticize me or make fun of me, or even though that's literally what we do now as a living, put ourselves out there and kind of be vulnerable. But for whatever reason, in my mind, I was like, this is safe. And then people applaud. It's great. It's nice. Nice dopamine right there. And then, growing up through high school and college, I kept kind of figuring out what I wanted to do. I wasn't really sure. I thought maybe journalism, but I kept coming back to theater. And then I finally just, you know, I was like, I guess I'm doing this. And I committed to theater. And I moved to Austin. I got my undergrad in film studies and then my master's in theater and went to Austin and started doing a lot of, like, commercial work, which I don't know if anyone's done commercial work. It's not really acting. It's just sort of showing up and smiling and pretending like you have a child and you have a dog and you're feeding them and driving a car that you can't afford, just barely making it. And I was doing that for about 8-9 years, not really pursuing the sort of creative goals that I had when I was younger, of wanting to do something meaningful and challenging and, something with purpose. And I was just barely making it. I was like, why am I might as well be a teacher. I might as well, like, get a real job. At that time, it did not feel like a real job. And I told, I was this sort of side note, but probably actually why we're here, I was struggling with depression too. I think that came from high expectations and hopes of what life would be like, and like kind of getting knocked down so many times. Acting is a hard profession, you guys. Like, we're rejected more than we're accepted. We are constantly told no. We're constantly told we're not good enough, thin enough, attractive enough, smart enough. You know, people, like, that's all they do is just, they look at you and they judge you. And you have to have this really thick skin in order to survive that. And then also, every audition, you have to completely take off that thick skin and, like, open up your heart and be as vulnerable as you can be. So there's this, like, really insane-making dynamic where you have to be authentic and then, like, live in an industry that's just so harsh, and like kind of play the game a little bit of like, that's not gonna hurt my feelings. I'm not gonna go home and think about that for the next few hours. Like, you have to, like, there's no way to outsmart it. So I was at a point where I didn't want to do it anymore. The joy of it was gone for me. I couldn't make rent. My agent told me that I booked a commercial and then texted me 10 minutes later saying, sorry, wrong Liz. And I was like, all right, that's a sign. I need to quit. You know, like, this is clearly not for me. So I told him, I was like, stop submitting me. I'm going to find a job as an editor or something where I don't have to ever talk to people again. And he was like, I'm going to keep you on the roster. And if I find something that I think you'd really like, I'm going to submit you. I was like, oh, fine, but I'm not going to. And I didn't hear anything for a while. And I was like, all right. Time to move on. I moved in with my mom. Thank you, Mom. Moms are the best. They are. And then I got an audition, and it was for Mary Magdalene / Lilith. I was like, what is this? Weird. And I read the scenes and just broke down in my bedroom. This is a role I've been dreaming about since I was a kid. I mean, this is a dream role. And not just Mary Magdalene as a historical figure, but the Lilith character I connected to so much, this point of despair, and the hope for redemption, the hope for a change, the hope for something really good to happen. And I connected with it. Really, I just clicked, and it was me. And so I went to the audition, and sort of the rest is history. But I look back now, I think it's funny, I guess, or I don't know, beautiful, that a lot of my sorrow and challenges and even depression were the things that helped me get this role. So I'm looking back, I'm like, nothing was a mistake, nothing was accidental. These things that I thought were my weakest points ended up being the things that brought me into, like, the greatest career joy of my life. That's kind of how I got here.
I have this list of questions, and you touched on, like, almost everything, so I guess we're done.
Succinct.
I do want to expand on all of that more too, and dive in a little bit more. But I relate to all of that so much, and I think our three characters on The Chosen, maybe more than any of the characters, like, there's a lot of us in them, and for everyone in the cast. But there is a lot of, like, specific things to, like, Matthew and Mary Magdalene and little James that are very specific to Paris and Liz and Jordan. And I'm excited to talk about that some more. But as far as, like, auditioning and the grind of that and being discouraged, I was in a similar boat because I had just had my first child, Ellie, and we were pregnant with our second, and I was like, I can't be a struggling, starving actor anymore. Like, I have to feed these kids, and, like, I have to get a real job, just like you were thinking. And it kind of came at, like, the perfect time. But it's brutal. Like, the commercial stuff, I never was, I never booked commercials. I don't think I have a commercial look or something. I just didn't get a lot of commercials. And the one I did book was a national commercial. I won't say the brand because I don't want to get anyone with them in trouble. But it was a national commercial that I booked, and then I was cut out of it because my limp was too prominent in the commercial.
And tell us who.
I'll tell you off the record.
We won't buy them anymore.
Tag them on Instagram.
All yeah, right. Yeah. We'll get a hashtag going. Boycott blank. Yeah, so it is. It's brutal. There's so much rejection. So, Paris, like you growing up, I want you to get to that as well and to how you found acting. But what was your childhood like? And, you know, like what? How were you in school? All that good stuff.
Yeah, I'm same as Liz. Oh, no, I'm kidding. No, I grew up in Central Florida in a beachy town and kind of the same thing. Never really felt like I fit in. I was kind of like ignored a lot, so didn't get invited to like birthday parties or
you can come to mine.
Thanks. You can come to mine. Everyone's welcome to mine, actually. But so this is a great birthday party. I love it. Yeah, so I kind of just flew under the radar just growing up and, you know, kind of always excelled in academics just like the good Indian boy is supposed to do. It's the same as you, and I think I feel like you have the same story too, is my first moment was performing in an Indian community New Year show, and my parents were like, what happened to you? Like, it's just like, I guess just being on stage and the energy and, you know, I don't know if a lot of you know my background, but I used to do a lot of Bollywood dancing and just performing arts and things like that. And so I always gravitated to that, but then I felt like I don't have a clear career path with that. And so I just kept going, you know, making my way in high school to like international baccalaureate program, honors and all that stuff. And then I remember one year I was in eighth grade and I auditioned for the drama club, and then I applied for the yearbook club, and I got into both. And then I picked the yearbook club, and then I was like, maybe it's just not my, I was like, why did I do that? But I think I want to perform, I'm not sure. And then.
That just made me think, like, you said like a good Indian boy, I got good grades and everything.
Yeah.
Was it maybe that pressure? Because there is kind of the expectation of like, you know, like you have to have a good career, like a, you know, being a doctor or a lawyer,
yeah,
things like
it,
that.
You know, it comes from just like
it's more tangible.
Yeah, and then my parents came to this country to make a living for us, and there's just more of the risk and things like that involved. But no, that happened in college when I wanted to minor in theater. My parents were like, "No, you don't." And so I did real estate, and you know, I didn't use anything I studied for in college.
Right.
But we'll get to that point. I'm in ninth grade. Yeah. Did the yearbook club, was great, because I always used like the artistic side of myself. So I just was always submitting like creative points to stories and creating different things, and it was a good moment. But then in ninth grade, I was like, let me act. Let me get into acting. And I remember, and this is, it's all about just who fits the part, who's the best part for it, but I went through a year of that class, and I remember we were doing accent work, and I had to do a Southern accent, and the teacher just laughed so loud at mine. And it was kind of like, it was funny, but it was just like a little jarring because he didn't laugh at anyone else's kind of thing. So it kind of just like took me out of it. And then I remember at the end of the year, like he thinks about all your work from the year and then puts you in a play. And I didn't get picked. I was just watching the people that did. So I was like, maybe I won't. Maybe it's not for me. Maybe like this idea that I had that I felt alive on stage is like, maybe it'll just die there. And so I just continued with my studies, did that. I went to school at the University of Florida, which none of you are probably from, right? Go Gators. And I did finance. And so I know what you're all thinking. Matthew was made for party, yeah. And you're like really right. So I'm just gonna keep talking. So in college, just did finance and was not enjoying it, but was kind of just like, let's just do this and get it over with. Yeah, and then when I wanted a minor in theater and didn't do that, I was like, okay, I'm gonna finish college with a minor in real estate and.
a degree in finance. This is great. And then the economy tanked. And so I couldn't get a job, and I was in Atlanta. But then the tax incentives broke in Atlanta, like with film and TV. And so that's when I just told my parents, I was like, look, let me just try this again. Let's see how this works. So then I started doing background work for half a year, saved money to put myself into classes and things like that, and then got an agent. And then I booked the very first audition I went out for, which is great, but then I didn't work for a whole year and a half again. So my parents were like, what are you, don't do this anymore. Like, this is just rough. And I agree. It was, like you said, it's a lot of just, you got to have a thick skin. And it's just, you're putting yourself out there. You're being very vulnerable. You know, and that's why I think so many people connect to our performances on this show, because you can see, like, us being fully transparent. Like, there's no other way than to be our authentic selves and just be honest in our work, you know? So that's kind of my path. But then I just was, as soon as I did that first project, I was like, this is it, this is me. So I just kept going for it. And then eventually moved to LA and, you know, did all that. But let me just cut to the last 4 years when The Chosen was happening. I was going home too to take a trip, just to take a break from acting, because it was just frustrating, annoying. You just want to throw tomatoes at everyone and just, you know, I don't know. Like, yeah, I would say so. Yeah, it's just like, hire me. No, just taking a break. I like to like take a break if I know I'm feeling burnt out or just tired, because I it's so important to take care of yourself, especially when it comes to what we do. So I went home, and then one of my friends was helping to cast the show, and she just sent me the whole invite to audition. And it was for Matthew. And she's like, I think you could do a really good job with this. Do, you know, just, and she sent everything. And I was like, no, I don't want to audition. Like, don't, no. And so I ignored the email for a few days. And then curiosity, you know, got to Paris. And so I opened the email, looked at it. I read the first four scripts, and I was like, my voice broke. So that's, you know, that's how important it was to me. And I just read the first four episodes, and I was like, I want to throw my name into the hat. And then what intrigued me even more was just the idea to play Matthew with, you know, not fully on the spectrum, but somewhat there, and also more OCD. And, you know, earlier that year I had, you know, done some work in a role like that, or just auditioning for that. And so it was just, I was like, you know, let me just see what I can do. And then I auditioned. I sent a tape from Florida. And I think a few days later, my friend was like, did you hear back from Dallas? And I was like, no, why? And she was like, well, he loved your tape. You're probably gonna get the part. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like, this is so easy, you know? And so then I got a callback. And I don't know if you've heard about this, but in that callback, I did it from my place in Florida, but the internet was the worst thing ever. And so the camera froze. And I was in the middle of, it was the Quintus and Matthew scene just reporting back on Simon. And it froze, and I freaked out. And so I'm just like looking like all on the side to get it to work, and it didn't. And I was like, this is not gonna happen. And so I finished the scene, and I'm like sweating. And then Dallas was like, great, you'll hear from us soon. And then I never heard from him. And I was like, okay, that's you know, that's Hollywood, or that's just entertainment, yeah. And then a week into them shooting, I got just an immediate offer for the part. They said, oh, they changed their minds and things like that. And they're like, do you still want to do this? And I said, yeah. And so flew out within days and just, you know, started my schedule on The Chosen. And then I met Amanda, Dallas's wife. And she told me it was that moment where I froze and panicked and did all this, was like, that's Matthew. That's got to be that guy. And so it just worked out. So, yeah. Thank you, Amanda Jenkins, yeah, for seeing that.
I love how we all have the like parallel of, we all were kind of, when we first got the audition, none of us wanted to do it. We were like, whatever, I'm not gonna do it. What's the point anyway? Because I, at the time, I was working admissions at an acting school, and I hadn't had an audition in a long time, and the ones I did have, I wasn't booking at all. It had probably been, you know, 5 years without me booking anything substantial, and other than the commercial that I got cut out of. So it was like really, really rough. But then the audition happened to be in the building I was working at, just like 50 feet from where my desk was. And yeah, it was like, so I said, oh yeah, I'll just do it during my lunch break. So I went down the hall, I did the audition, and it gave me like peace during the audition, because normally I'm like panicking and I'm like, don't let them see your limp. And I'm thinking all of these things that take me out of the scene. But in this, I was like, no, this is where I work. I've worked here for a while. I went to school there. So I was like, this is my, it's like if someone came to your own living room to audition you. And so I just felt more comfortable than I normally did. And I auditioned for Matthew first too. So thanks a lot. And
you're welcome. No, I wish I could have auditioned for a Little James or anyone. I was just one and done with Matthew.
Yeah, no,
they're
exactly.
Like, that's whatever. Like,
well, I did Matthew and then I did Andrew and then I got offered Little James. And but yeah, it was a thing where like Dallas or Amanda was someone that whenever I met her gave me a lot of encouragement as well.
Yeah.
And she told me a story that like, because she's very involved with Dallas when it comes to like casting. He always gets her opinion on like, hey, what do you think of this guy? And they have a board of like when they're casting, they're like, this is Jesus, this is Mary Magdalene. And they put headshots up of everyone that gets the part. And after I shot my first 4 days, which I want to talk more about, because I didn't really get to interact much with you for the first 4 episodes.
I remember we were in Benbrook Lake.
Yeah.
And you just immediately, I think you and Giovanni first were the first ones to ever just say, hey, you know, and chat. And not that everyone, but my character was so
isolated. You didn't interact with
me. I was like, I just didn't socialize with anyone the first eight weeks we were filming? Yeah, so it was.
Well, same with you, Liz, because you were possessed most of that time.
Yeah, it was rough for you.
Big time.
But I remember at Benbrook Lake, whenever we were, I had just wrapped, and they said that's a picture app on Jordan and Giovanni. And I only worked 4 days, those first 4 episodes. I only spoke in the one Shabbat dinner scene. But I was just grateful to be on a set and to be working again. And as I was about to leave and, you know, I said goodbye to everyone, I was thinking that was it. Like, you know, maybe we'll come back and do another 4. But based on my luck in the past, I was like, it's not going to continue. So I was just, you know, grateful that I got to experience it. And Amanda was like, hey, can I walk you to your trailer? And I was like, yeah. And as we were walking, she said that one day she came home and they were still in the middle of casting and she saw my picture up under Little James. And she was like, who's this? And Dallas was like, oh, don't worry, that's Little James. And she was like, you didn't consult me on this. And she said that I was the one apostle in the first 4 episodes that he didn't talk to her about before, because I guess he knew in this second audition, he was like, oh yeah, that's Little James.
Oh, yeah.
And it made me feel good, you know, because it's like, you don't always hear the, you know, positive reinforcement. You're just constantly doubting yourself and everything. But it's cool that we all have like very similar paths to getting on The Chosen. Before we talk more about The Chosen, I know we've talked a little bit about this before, but a common theme on the podcast is bullying. Since I was severely bullied as a kid, what were your experiences like with bullying, if any? Like what kind of, you know, bullies did you have to face as children?
I think, I don't know, girls and boys are so different, and I think a lot of the bullying that I experienced was really nuanced and psychological, you know, like, I think it was at third grade, I was invited to my best friend's birthday party, and then the day of, her mother called my mother and said her little brother was sick, and so they're not having it. I'm like, oh, okay. The next Monday at school, I bring her birthday present. And I'm like, here you go. And she was like, oh, she said something that like let me know that like she had it. And I was like, did you have a birthday? Or she was like, oh, I wish you could have gone. Something like that. So you had it? She was like, yes. That was at a time where I was, I mean, so young that I don't think I understood what that all meant. And I hope I don't offend anyone, but I was, you know, raised Catholic and they were Baptist and I wasn't going to their church. And so I didn't get to go to her birthday party. And so from a very young age, I felt excluded based on the religion my family was. And I never like understood. I was just like, oh, I'm just not included in things. And that kind of continued throughout the years of just like, if I didn't go to the popular Christian kids' parties or events, or if I didn't go to church with them, then I wasn't I couldn't be friends with them. And man, that hurts. As a kid, you don't realize like what's actually happening. And it's, you know, it ends up being the politics of the parents. It's not the kids doing it. But that's something I'm really incredibly grateful to be a part of with the show, is the connecting different religions through the show and like getting back to the actual story of Jesus and like people connecting over that instead of the differences. I find that to be like really important to me. But yeah, I think starting at a young age where you're like, you're just not included has made me always just feel like people don't want me at their parties. People don't want me at their events. People don't, even in high school, like I would go to things and like show up and be like, I'm gonna go make friends. And like, no one wanted to talk to me. And maybe I was just socially awkward, or I just like didn't have anything to talk about. I don't know what was wrong, but like I was so insecure. And I think it can kind of create a mentality of like, of being in disbelief when people are finally like, I really like you, I really want to be your friend. I'm constantly like, why, you know, like, what do you want? Like, I get really confused over it still. And that attitude comes off as really, I think, awkward and like distant. And so it's sort of like, it's this thing that perpetuates itself that as an adult, I'm like, oh, is this me or is this my old fear? Or is it possible that people just want to be friends, you know?
I want to be your friend. And you can come to my party,
too.
I
want
to
be your friend.
Yeah. I'll give you a Valentine's Day
card.
Thank
you. Yeah. It has to have candy in it, though.
Yes,
isn't it weird,
sweethearts.
Though? Yeah, right. Isn't it weird, though, how, like, what some kid in, like, eighth grade says can stick with us into our 30s?
Silly.
Like, they probably just said it and forgot it.
They don't remember. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild.
I remember one of the first times in high school, and I've told this story, I'll keep it short, but I've told it on the podcast before, but I couldn't fit in high school. I couldn't find anyone to, like, that would let me into their friend group because I was new there. Everyone else had gone to school with each other since like elementary school. It was a big public school. And then I wore different clothes going to different cliques and groups trying to fit in. And I just like kind of slide into their lunch table.
Is there a goth Jordan?
There was, yeah.
Oh.
I wore
pictures or it never happened.
Pictures, yeah. I need.
I went to Hot Topic and I got some black t-shirts and some choker necklaces.
Yeah.
I went through a skater phase, even though I couldn't skate. I wore tall tees at one point. I went through all the phases. Although I just wanted to wear Hawaiian shirts and like cargo shorts, but yeah, that wasn't in. So I felt like I had to conform to like what other people were doing. And then one day I'd kind of given up on it and I'd go home and like tell my mom like, oh yeah, I'm making all these friends when I really wasn't. And then a kid invited me to go eat lunch with him and his friends. And whenever I went and sat there, they were asking like, so what do you like to do? And I said, oh, I act. And at that point I had done like a guest spot on a Nickelodeon show and like a thing on Walker, Texas Ranger as a kid. So I had done a few things and I was telling him like, I act and I've done this and this. And they seemed interested. And I was like, oh, cool. Someone like likes me and is interested. And then after a while, when I mentioned the Nickelodeon show, he was like, oh, I didn't know they let cripples on that show. And that's when I realized, like, oh, he doesn't want to be friends at all. He's just, you know, making fun of me. And then from then on, like you said, having that fear or that wall up of like, oh, is this person really wanting to be my friend or are they just going to make fun of me? And because of that, I've realized it as I've gotten older. I have this insecurity when it comes to like any of my friends or people in my life where it's like, I'm so scared that I'm going to do something to make them not want to be my friend, where it's like, I'm always feeling like I have to prove myself or I can't like, you know, I have to be funny. I have to make people laugh. And it's still, you know, into my 30s, this thing that this kid in ninth grade said still stuck with me. So yeah, it's crazy. But what were your experiences, Paris?
Yeah, of course I was bullied. just growing up, and it's interesting because I guess my perspective on how I was even in high school and stuff, I thought I was just like, didn't have friends. But then if I run into an old high school acquaintance, they're like, oh yeah, you were like one of the cool kids. And I was like, no, I was like bullied. I was spit on and like shoved and everything. But
I guess it's interesting to hear people's perspectives, and it really helped me kind of make peace with that, because, you know, I'm a very sensitive individual, so whenever I was bullied, like in elementary school, middle school, or high school, like it ruined my day. It would just ruin the rest of my day, and I would still stick with that thought. And it's like I was saying, like, the person who does it doesn't even know you that well, probably. It's probably insecure themselves, and just probably doesn't even remember what they said. But, you know, we're growing adults, so we don't know that, like, that clarity comes later in life. But, yeah, I think, you know, my parents were always just really supportive, and they would always, you know, just give me great advice of, love and you know, just hang in there and things like that. And they would, my dad would come to school sometimes to talk to, like, the PTA or the principal and just, you know, things like that. And it was nice, but, you know, when you're in high school, it's not the best thing that happened to you. But, yeah, you know, bullying, you know, I've had that happen on a set before, like when I was newly starting out, and I think it comes in all forms. But I think the greatest thing that I've learned is how to deal with that now. So, yeah, I think.
How do you deal with it now, if you don't mind me asking?
You beat them up.
Yeah. I throw water balloons at
them. There we go, yeah.
It was more of just like a mental thing for me. It was just flipping the script in a way of just what I said about, if someone doesn't even know you and just makes a statement or just says something or is a keyboard troll or whatever on social media, it's their own problem. It's their own insecurity. That's not on you to take. And it just that, knowing that, and just kind of really, it took me a while. It's not like an overnight thing for me, but, you know, I was going to, like, I didn't want to get myself into, like, a bad headspace with that. And I just, to protect my own mental health, I was just like, no, this is, and I agree with that. Like, if someone doesn't even know you and they're making a comment on you just on the way you look or just, you know, what they see or what they perceive you to be, like, they don't even matter, man. Like, who cares about them? And so it's just, you know, yeah.
So. I've found that most people that do the bullying are so scared. They're so scared. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing it. Otherwise, they would be complimenting you or including you. They themselves are so scared of being ostracized or excluded that they have to sort of, like, beat you to the punch and, like, say the mean thing first or exclude you first or, like, position themselves in a way that makes them feel powerful.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's bullying who's, like, is actually confident. Knowing that in the back of your head of just, like, this person is insecure, and then, like, extending a little bit of, I mean, I guess, love and pity for them.
Or grace,
of just, like,
even.
Grace. Yeah, pity's not quite it. I think it's grace of just, like, they must be going through something or they need time to mature. Is easy, because then it's just not your problem at all. You
know? I think sometimes with bullies, when they see someone doing something that they maybe might want to do or just are envious of this charisma or something, I feel like maybe that's also where some people just make comments and right. try to bring you down, because it's
the only way for them to feel
It's
powerful
to validate themselves in the situation.
That's what my mom told me a lot growing up, was that kids that are mean, you know, they learned that from somewhere, or they're doing it because they have an insecurity. And it hurt still, but it also made me, like, I felt bad for them, because I knew that it wasn't me, it was them. Like, the reason they were doing it is because something they were dealing with themselves. It made me, you talking about having bullies on set, it made me think, do you guys remember earlier this season when an extra came up to me and said something?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I had someone come up and say, hey, have you lost weight? Someone that was background on the show. And I was like, oh, I don't think so. And they were like, really? And I was like, no, I don't. I think I've been about the same for a while. And they're like, oh, maybe you just look really fat on screen. But other than that, I think it didn't
upset
me. Don't
worry, that happened to me, like, in season, like.
Right.
Yeah, they're like, what happened to Matthew?
Some people just don't have filters. And I don't think that person was trying to bully me. It was just, like, a very insensitive comment. But it didn't upset me. It was just kind of surprising. But The Chosen, regardless of that one instance, The Chosen is a very supportive and safe environment, at least in my experience. And a huge part of that is people like you two and the rest of our cast and crew. And I know early on, I was already impressed. Like, I got to see you actually act. I didn't really even get to see you act until it came out. But I liked you. I remember we had one conversation at the lake, and I didn't even talk to, like, you know, most of the other cast. But I remember watching you in the scene, and I was really impressed, and I got along with you and Jonathan and Giovanni. But then it was the next four episodes, when we came back a year later, when it really became like this close-knit family group, because we were all at that point in the story traveling together, and it was really fun. So at what point did the two of you feel that same kind of connection with everyone? Did you feel that like deep love for this group that we've, you know, that's become our chosen family?
I mean, I think it just it grows and grows and grows, you know. I think starting off, especially with that scene with all of you at the Shabbat dinner, I had never felt so like warm and cozy on set.
Even though it was freezing.
It was freezing. I know, that's funny.
Either freezing or boiling hot. Yeah.
Very extreme. But every set I had been on before that, either if it was indie films or were like a guest star in like a bigger project, I just never felt like, again, like I just didn't feel like I belonged. I always felt like they made a mistake or they wish they went with another actor, but they, you know, like you make up these stories of like why you don't belong. But the attitude on set, on those sets, you know, everyone's rushing around, and as an actor, you kind of feel like excluded, like the crew is the actual thing, and then you come on for like a day or two and you could be anyone and they just don't care, you know? But this one, and maybe it was being cast as a lead that was the difference, possibly. But it was also, I mean, just everyone on set, the crew, the other actors, the extras, like everyone was so sweet in a way that I had never experienced. From the audition with Dallas and with Justin being the reader, like it felt so. You just felt safe, you know, and you felt, and to be able to do some of the things that are written for us as characters, like we have to feel safe because we're opening ourselves up in such a way that, like, you know, if somebody like snickers after a take where you're like screaming and crying and like bashing your head, like I'm not coming back, you know, like it's too vulnerable. It's just this show, there's so many of us that are just being too vulnerable for it to be a catty set, you know? So just from the beginning, like, everyone has made it feel like a safe place to go to places that nobody wants to go to, but we have to, you know?
Yeah, well, and there's, like, an unspoken, like, agreement on set, too, and also understanding of, like, if Paris has, like, a really emotional scene one day, we all know that, and it's, like, we kind of know what Paris specifically needs from us in that moment or that day. Or if, like, you know, Jonathan has a lot of dialogue one day, we're like, okay, let's let him do his thing. So I feel like everyone does a really good job of being aware of what everyone else is at, because there's most days we're all background. Like, yeah. There's yeah. Two or three people talking in most scenes. There are every now and then, like, the massive scenes where all 14 of us are saying something, but for the most part, we're in the background moving logs around or something, or poking a fire. So it's easy to kind of goof around and have fun, but we know when is the right time to do it, who's the right person to do it with in that particular moment, and I think that's cool. But anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to jump in.
You know, just to add on to that, I feel like our cast is so respectful of one another because we started this thing not knowing the momentum or what was going to happen with it. So we kind of were just all, I'll speak for myself, I was an unknown. I think I'm still an unknown, but still, I just, you know, like we all kind of started on the same thing and we just poured our hearts into something, and just to see it grow the way it has grown, and even our crew, just how much they work, like we're just all a close unit from that. Like, so we've been through so much. So I think that's why we are just so close and just respectful of one another, because
It's the same thing you were saying. Like, I was used to going on a set and just being ignored by the main cast because I was just a day player or a guest. And, you know, coming to this set as a lead, I always wanted to make sure that any guests that we have or any day players that we had, and the rest of our cast does this, but we want to include them as well because we've all been there and we know how it feels, you know? So that's a great point that you were making. As far as getting close to the cast, season one, like I said, Matthew, his only friends were Quintus and Gaius, and he didn't really hang out with them on non-filming days. I did have my first scene with Simon Shahar, and so him and I kind of hit it off from the beginning because we understood both of our work ethics, and so during that first half, he was someone that I got close with, and then the second half, in summer, I think it was the rest of you guys just... I think the hotel lobby, just puzzles and eating cereal and yogurt and board games and things like that, you know. We just created that bond, and it shows so much in our scenes, I think, because we just know each other so well.
It's almost like going off to school. Like, we're going to Hogwarts
summer
again
camp.
Or something.
Summer
like,
camp.
Like, yeah, it's like we get to see our friends whenever we start. And, like, especially in Utah when we for season two, it was like we had gone so long without filming, and it was, we were all so ready to work again. It was in the height of COVID, so we were all kind of in a bubble, but it was so cool. And I feel like that was a really good bonding experience for all of us too. But we had touched on this earlier. So, like, you know, some characters you disappear into and it's like you become another person basically. But with our three characters, like I talked about, there's so many things that are us that are in these characters. And in my instance, you know, Dallas and Tyler and Ryan taking the thing, and you talked about this as well, the thing that you viewed as your greatest flaws ended up helping you more than anything. And for me, that happened as well. And it's scary at times. It's really vulnerable. Last season when I did my scene with Joey, I was terrified because publicly I was having to talk about my deepest insecurities for the first time, even though I was doing it as little James. It was still all of these feelings that I felt myself. So what's that been like? Has that been cathartic for the two of you, playing these characters and getting to kind of work through maybe some, or realize some things about yourself through your characters?
Yeah, I feel like there's a sort of, I don't know, symbiotic relationship between Mary and me. When I first got it and I was primarily playing Lilith, those scenes, that helped to me work out a lot of my emotions, a lot of my issues from past relationships and self-medicating, and like it was this thing that I was able to almost like expel from myself by delving into it and kind of looking at it in like the most extreme way and embodying it in the most like obvious way. And then of course the redemption and being able to like kind of start over, I needed that in my own life of just like a new beginning. And so that was just lovely. It was such a gift in my own life and sort of my own psychology. And then, of course, season two, there's a relapse. I'm like, do I have to relapse into depression again? That was the first time I realized I don't have to do method acting. And method in the first season was accidental. I don't think I was trying to do method. It was so similar to how I was feeling that I was able to use what I was feeling for the role. Season two, I realized, like, I don't need to do that, and that's not healthy. All my anxieties over being able to perform those really difficult scenes were alleviated when I just showed up to set and looked into the faces of my scene partners and went through the scene moment by moment, just in the present, you know, place that we were in, and being able to just listen to you and respond to you, and it was so relieving to know that I didn't have to beat myself up in order to be beat up in a scene. And I learned that because of you guys, because of you, Shahar, and Jonathan specifically, in those two really challenging scenes. I thought, I get to actually play a character now. I don't have to change who I am in order to meet this character where she's at. And then I realized, that's acting, Liz. You're that's what we do. We don't have to hurt ourselves in order to play a character that's hurt. Wonderful. So now at this point, I think there's a nice, healthy distance between me and the character, and I get to just work out sort of, you know, personality dynamics and everything. It's all gifts because she's growing and learning and maturing. And in the same ways, I feel like I am sort of thanks to her. I'm able to use this as this vehicle to like continue to mature on a path. And so that's her influencing me instead of me influencing her.
Paris?
I like that. That's great. Her influencing me instead of me influencing. Great. Jordan, what was the question?
Has it been, how did I word it? Has it been cathartic getting to play Matthew, and have you been able to like work out any of your own issues through Matthew at all? Or has he helped you understand more things about yourself? Are you better at math?
I've always been better at math. I'm not good at math.
You're the rare actor that's good at math.
Yeah, yeah. I do everyone's taxes, you know, on the cast. Matthew has taught me a lot of lessons. One of them is just to be patient and more understanding and not to go to angry a lot. I do that, you know, sometimes. I know my first half of the season, I was isolated, so I kind of resonated with that character of Matthew, so it really helped me flesh him out more. I remember just to get into the numbers thing, I bought a book of Sudoku puzzles, and so I just did that all day. And I was staying away from the cast because I was at a different hotel than you guys. And so that was how I kind of connected to Matthew. And then I just think it's just such a great gift from our writers to see his progress. And he's like the anti-hero, and I love that. And so it's teaching me more than I'm teaching the character, I think. So it's probably the opposite of you, I'd say. But I am going through what you are going through last season. It's my turn to the waterworks. So it's just been great. Sometimes I do worry about the writers incorporating natural traits or natural things that
we
have.
Sometimes I'm sure is subconscious
for
them. Because they know us really well too.
They're very observant. But it's great because it teaches you to work on that and to try your best to work on that. Because trauma that isn't confronted is just pain. Yeah. So that's why I'm just saying this whole experience is helping me, and you know, just here for the ride, I guess.
I think because there have been certain things that through Little James I've been able to kind of realize about myself or come to peace with certain things, but a lot of it was the environment, like having all of you there. And the scene where we're talking about the first time we met Jesus when we're all aged. Sorry, spoiler alert if you haven't seen season 2 yet, but if you haven't, you need to, because I'm going to talk about it. But it opens with us reminiscing about meeting Jesus, and that was the first time I ever had to cry in a project. And it was like scary leading up to it, the months leading up to it. I was like freaking out, and I'd practice in the car, and some days I wasn't able to cry in the car, and I was like, what if this happens on the day, on set?
Dude, that happened to me only because of the hold for clouds, and I'm like, I'm crying here, I can't hold for clouds, and then I just run dry.
It's hard.
Yeah,
but
Mandy
then
really helped me out, though.
That's good.
I was struggling.
It's really tough.
Yeah.
But then I remember before, and I mentioned this on the podcast as well, but like looking at all of you and just the love we all have for each other and how safe I felt, I got up and I hugged each of you all in our old age makeup, and then I went in and did the scene, and it was so easy. It was like every take. So I think that if we were in a less healthy environment, it wouldn't be the case for
100%.
Us.
100%. And I think with our cast, too, I think we all trust each other so much that we are able to be so vulnerable and just be raw and just be human in that time. And I think it's really showing. I trust every one of you all.
Same.
You know? And I can't wait to keep working with different dynamics in our cast.
I know. That's
fun.
Why I love that we have so many seasons. At some point, all of us will get to like interact one-on-one with everyone, like I'm sure. But the three of our characters have very specific traits, but they're also kind of universal things. Like Mary Magdalene struggling with like you know, rejection and addiction and suicidal tendencies and depression, all of this stuff. And then with Matthew, you know, so many people who are on the autism spectrum and who have social disorders or anxiety, like they connect with Matthew or just feel alone or isolated. And then now, thanks to Dallas embracing my own differences, Little James has kind of become a spokesperson for people with physical disabilities. And it's been really cool. That's been one of the biggest like blessings of this whole thing for me, is the people that have reached out and been like, I connect to that. And that made me feel seen. And I know I've heard stories from both of you of fans that have reached out and said similar things to you. So what have been some of the most impactful comments that you've gotten from fans who have connected to your characters?
There are so many people that have, you know, it's at this point, it's almost hard to like keep track of. But it's always lovely to have people comment on like, I've gone through something similar and I've come out the other side. It's really nice to hear those stories of like, there is some light at the end of the tunnel. I think Mary's story is such a relieving story, because often someone who has addiction issues or PTSD or just so much trauma in Hollywood stories, it's rare that there's a happy ending. You know, it's rare that like that gets taken care of in the right way. It's usually a tragic story. So for her to be able to start over and feel, you know, healed and renewed and able to have another completely different type of life, I think brings hope to people that like you can have a completely different life. And a lot of that, even if it's not on a really dramatic way scale, you know, it can just be someone who's like a little depressed and then like changing your mentality about things. And I've gone through that of like not being so pessimistic and looking at the, you know, the good side of things. And you know, I think showing Mary come out of this really lonely and dark place into a place filled with really sweet and loving characters shows the importance of community too, and of surrounding yourself with kind and good people. And so the people that have been responding over all of that and saying like, I know that there's another way to live, and it's good, and it's, you know, life affirming, has been the stuff that has really stuck with me.
For me, I just never thought I would be at this platform to be where I am, and I'm just grateful for it. But every message or every comment, anything good or bad, it feels like the first time, and it's a good way. The bad comments I don't really get much of, but the ones that I do, I kind of use it to just ignore. But the good stuff, you know, for me, growing up, I never saw a version of myself as a lead on anything before. So the biggest thing that I have gotten in terms of just message and love is just that feeling seen, feeling represented, not only as a South Asian, but also just representing the autism community and people just seeing it more normalized and not seen as a stigma or not seen as an outcast. And it just means so much to me, because representation is something that I didn't feel like I grew up with. And a lot of the reasons why I became an actor was that, and to inspire people, and to also just, because I was very emotional, so I just needed some outlet. But, you know, that's the biggest thing for me, just community and representation, and that's something that I will always aspire to be my best and do my best for this character on this show.
I love that. I do have... Y'all can clap. Yeah. I heard a couple people starting to... I have one more question for y'all later on. Before I'm about to answer some of your questions, those of you who filled out, or we are, those of you who filled out little question cards.
But can you have a quick shout out, really quick.
Of course.
Okay, cool. So, is there Jack Cornette? I just wanted to say hello. I know you brought your mom from Arlington. You flew from LA. Wow. Hope you're having a good time. Also, I don't remember the supporter that went drove from Nashville.
Yeah, someone drove from Nashville.
I don't know your name, but hi to you. Hi to everyone
that
traveled around.
There we go. Front row.
Just a quick hello. It means the world to us. So, yeah. All right, back to you.
No. Before I get to those questions, though, I have another sponsor of What's Your Limp that I have to give a shout out to, Inclusion Coffee, which is literally just right down the road. It's like walking distance from here almost, right down the road. It's my favorite coffee place in DFW easily. It has like an upper like loft area, really good coffee. Again, you can scan the QR code on the back of your program. They have really good food, plenty of outlets if you're doing work there, and it's just an awesome, awesome place. I highly recommend it. Go check them out. I plan on doing some sort of meet and greet there, maybe another podcast recording, so I'll post about that as well. So go to Inclusion Coffee in Arlington and show them some love there. Also follow them on social media. But now let me grab these questions really quick. And also we do have some special guests coming up soon. So our special guests, if you're listening, if you want to work your way to the backstage area, we will be calling upon you soon. Anyway, so let's see here. I will just start from the top. This one is from Julie Foster. Julie, where are you? There we go. Hi, Julie. Let's see. So there's two. What is your favorite scene and what is your favorite vacation spot?
Easy. When I vomited and Paris helped me.
My answer too.
Nice.
I mean, when Matthew helped me.
Yeah. I will hold your throw up in my hand.
Yeah, right.
Thank you.
Even though it was CGI, I will hold your throw up in my hand.
It's just an audio cue, I think.
And vacation spot?
I love New York City.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about you, Paris?
Whoa, this just took me out with this question. I my favorite vacation spot, this is going to sound so cheesy, but it's so true. It's when I'm with my family. So, yeah. So,
yeah. Do you have a favorite scene?
Favorite what?
Scene in the show.
I think
the vomit.
Yeah.
Nice. I mean, the scene leading up to that.
Yeah.
Well, just seeing his heart and, you know, surprising. Yeah.
I loved that. That's one of my favorite scenes as well.
And then, you know, I always enjoy my first scene on a project because it's like your moment to just really, yeah, you're stepping into it and here I am. And I just remember that first experience. So with Jahar, it was a great time. And then the season two, the ending with the Beatitudes was a great moment. And just like the whole view in Utah and just Jonathan and so I have three favorite scenes.
Nice. But,
yeah,
my favorite scene I've been a part of was the oneer that we did where the 15 minutes.
Nope.
You did great. Yeah. But
Yoshi was like the MVP of that scene.
It was great. That was such a crazy day, but that was so much fun. And also for my character, I got to really flesh him out for the first time. And then, although that answer will change in a few weeks when I film another scene coming up, hint, hint. My favorite scene, one of my favorite scenes, it's what I always think of, is actually with you and Jonathan after you've come back in season two, in the tent when you're like not even wanting to make eye contact. That scene gets to me every time. That's one of my favorites of the whole show. Yeah, I don't blame you.
Those two are meaningful.
Yeah, they're so good.
Matthew's like eavesdropping at the tent.
Yeah, right. Okay, so let's see, what time is it? Okay, good, we're good. When are fans allowed to visit the set? I'm not sure. I mean, there's like opportunities for background every now and then for like investors and stuff. I know they do at some point with the new sets want to have like tours and stuff, so I don't know the answer, but hopefully soon. Who is your favorite actor to work with and why is it Joey? And this is definitely not from Joey.
Dude, Joey's the worst person to
work
with.
Joey is awful.
Yeah.
That was the only thing I didn't like about the oneer is that I had to do it with Joey.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. Joe, oh, yeah. Go through that.
The worst. Just the worst.
That's a joke. I love Thomas.
Yes, we love you,
I love Joey.
He's a wonderful actor.
Let's see. Has portraying these types of characters affected or changed anything in your real day-to-day lives? Yeah, I mean, that's from Fernando. Yeah, I mean, I think we kind of touched on that. When you were offered your role in The Chosen, did you ever think it would be an international hit? No.
I mean, I think we were hoping it, it had the promise of being a hit, but I know, not knowing what the set was going to be like or what the other actors or the, I knew the script was so good, so I was just like praying that everything else is sort of, you know, matching that, and it has, and then continues to keep getting
It's really hard for a project to kind of take off, like, in the business and just have it be what it is. So this thing, I know from both of you, like, overnight, like, just, I remember it was, like, around Easter in 2020.
Yeah.
And you just saw, like, the buildup. So I never expected it. But it's not to say that the project wasn't good or the writing wasn't fantastic, but it's just that it's really hard to have what we have. So that's why we never take this for granted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of pilots that get made too that, you know, you get really excited about and you're like, this is going to be like the big break, my big break, you know? And they always fall flat or they're not picked up or something. So I think having gone through a few of those disappointments, it's knowing like, don't get too excited.
Right.
And
but it really, don't get your hopes up. Yeah, don't get your hopes up.
Yeah, yeah. With us on this show, because it was the same thing at first. It's like, oh, cool, we did four episodes. That's it. We're not coming back.
But I'll never see you again. That's fantastic. Yeah. Yeah.
But then we keep coming back, and now I'm at a point where it's like, I feel comfortable like
I think this
being
is a
exciting
thing.
About it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we can be excited.
I think
about
we're like Avengers level, you know?
Yeah. Like, right?
You know?
Well, yeah.
No, we're higher than that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're kind of, that's kind of the structure of the show. It's like Jesus is assembling his Avengers in season one. So
that means they have spinoffs? I don't know.
Yeah, right? I know. Who knows? So this one's for Paris. How does your cultural background, sorry, I can't read, enhance your character development?
I don't think it does.
Yeah.
No.
Maybe just your personal, like you talked about, it was your personal experiences and stuff that kind of helped.
Yeah, yeah, just dealing with, you know, just being misunderstood or not always feeling like you fit in and kind of making your way, but also being just a strong individual inside, and it takes a minute for people to see that on the outside, and I mean, that's just like what Matthew is on this, and so it's, you know, with character development, it's just a process of research and, you know, working with Dallas, and just, we kind of just really, this is not just me doing this. It's a team effort, and I fully give that to Dallas and team and everything, and, you know, I'm just the vessel. I do bring a lot to myself into my part, and I have I do like to have some fun with it and things like that, but
yeah,
that's kind of what develops this character for me. It's not any my background or anything.
Yeah, I like it. Jordan, your grandfather is an amazing actor. Did he have an influence on your acting? Yeah, more so than my like acting style. I feel like we're very, my grandpa's Barry Corbin, and all of my grandparents have been the biggest influences on me. But he is more of like an authoritative figure, like cowboy actor. So I don't ever picture us playing the same types of parts, typically, but, as far as how he carries himself within the industry and how he's treated fans and, how he prepares and things like that, that's been the biggest influence on me, in the way I prepare. So yeah, for sure. What was something that surprised you from working on The Chosen?
The respect.
Yeah.
No, I everyone was just so kind to work with. Everyone's just so happy you're a part of it. So it felt like a family. You feel like you're a team making something, and that's where the passion shows.
Yeah.
And that's why it is where it is right now, you know?
It's all surprising to me because, I mean, where I was at when I first took it, this is better than anything I could have imagined. And it keeps continuing to surprise. Each season keeps getting like the writing, the acting, everyone's so incredible to work with. You wish for something like this, you know, you pray for something like this, but like to actually be living in it, sometimes I'm pinching myself. And I sometimes still don't believe. I'm like, is this real life?
Yeah.
Every time I get some sort of letter or like artwork from one of our supporters, that's where I'm like, is this, it's just, I'm boring. Like, you're going to make a painting of me. I feel it's awesome. So, yeah, that's always surprising me, especially when I think I got a necklace with a spoon.
That's cool.
Like, it's so cool, yeah. It's all surprising.
How do you think the relationship with Judas is going to be?
Not good.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, is he? He's not here. Yeah.
We know you're here.
Is he here? Is he
always
lurking?
We'll see. No,
yeah.
he's such a good actor.
He's great.
Such a sweetheart.
Yeah, he's like he feels like a little brother to me.
Yeah, well, I want to add that as well, that like everyone, we were all lucky to be there from the beginning, and each season, new people were added, but there was never a time where it's like someone joined the group and didn't really fit in, I don't feel like. Like everyone immediately came in, and I think it's a testament to our entire cast of how warm and welcoming everyone is. But it's like, I feel like I know Luke and Yoshi and Austin and Joey and everyone else like as well as I know anyone, like the people that were there since the beginning. And it's a really special group. With so many different faiths and nationalities in the cast and crew of The Chosen, do you feel like it's made you more tolerant and accepting of others? And what have you learned from each other?
I think that most of the cast and crew are already pretty tolerant and accepting of each other.
Yeah.
I think the anxiety, of course, was the idea that fans might be accepting and tolerant of anyone that is not maybe of the exact same faith. I mentioned earlier just like the difference between Protestant and Catholicism when I was a child was such a huge thing. And that's something that I've been enjoying is that like there's less of an attack of each other and more of a focus on what everyone, you know, like the point of the thing. Even if you're not Christian, I think this show still teaches really beautiful lessons that can be applied to any religion or any philosophy. So I think that like, you know, all of us are all supportive of each other, period, no matter what. I think the inclusion is a huge part of who we are. But yeah, I think that the fear might be that other people wouldn't be. But, you know, I think the show's changing that.
I agree, yeah.
Yeah, I think the fact that you have people from all different backgrounds and walks of life, and they're still making this show for 4 years and part of the family shows how tolerant our production is.
And I think, too, that's something I've learned doing the podcast and having conversations with our castmates, but then other people as well. Of course, there's going to be one or two hateful comments about something, but the vast majority of people that are fans of The Chosen that have listened to the podcast, even if there's someone I'm talking to that they disagree on a certain thing, the vast majority of people have been very open and accepting of those different views, and I think that's awesome. This one's fun. I'm 99, and I love life. Biggest fan of Matthew. And here we go.
Yeah!
And then on the back it says, is Matthew, 99. And then it says Paris in quotations, married?
I am not married.
Yet.
To his job.
Yeah.
Or am I? I don't know.
Yeah. For all three of you, if you could pick a different limp, what would you pick?
Interesting.
Yeah. A different limp. So a limp, I guess, at least in the podcast, I've established a limp as as something that maybe, it can be anything really. It can be something you're insecure about, something you don't like about yourself. So I don't want any more limps.
Yeah. I'll pass. Yeah.
Well, I'll just trade limps for a day.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to encourage people to learn to accept the things that make them different. That's kind of the goal of the podcast. So, that's my goal. If you do have a limp, I think, just self-acceptance and being a little kinder to yourself.
Yeah, embrace your differences is especially the motto for our youth these days. You know, they just need to hear things like that.
Yeah. And then lastly, someone just commented on the video I did recently holding my castmates' hands. I held your hand.
Yeah.
You passed.
I did. Okay, thanks.
I think
put it on the record. I passed because I had no idea what you were doing.
Did you see the video, Liz?
I did. Okay. I loved it.
So I'm going to keep it going. There's still plenty of castmates who I didn't get in that video. But so far, everyone has passed. I'm interested to see Dallas's reaction when I inevitably try to hold his hands. I have to be careful about
Do it tomorrow.
I don't know if tomorrow, it's a heavy scene.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I'll wait until it's like one of the like easy scenes where we're just like joking around in the scene. Or yeah, we'll figure it out. But I will get him at some point. But now is the time. Let's see, I'm making sure I have a list of everything. Okay. So now I'm going to bring out some surprise guests. Let's start with the first person. Who's the first person we have up there? I'm going to call George.
We don't even know.
Who you know is John. George Xanthus out first. And if you want to grab a chair, George, when you come out, or a stool. So we've got a couple extra microphones. There's a stand over here somewhere if y'all want to grab a microphone. Next up, it looks like we have Judas himself, Luke Demian. There we go. There's five, just so everyone knows, there's only five microphones, so we're going to have to share. Next up, we got Noah James, a.k.a. Andrew.
Did you take a microphone? No, I'm not taking one.
Now we got Simon Z coming, it looks like. Now we got Giovanni, who plays Thaddeus. We got Lada Silva, who you know is Eden.
Wrestling show, I love it.
Next up, we've got Amber Williams. Come on out. Who else we got? Okay, and now, wait, no, sorry, Joey, we don't have enough room up here anymore. Sorry.
Bye, Joey.
I'm kidding. Come on out, Joey. We got Joey Vahidi, a.k.a. Thomas. And is that it? Is that everyone? I think it is. Wait, is that it? Yeah? Okay, cool.
I'm actually surprised by this surprise. This is a lot.
Yeah, okay.
I love that you all came.
Oh, look who it is. Come here, hug. So I have a question for you, Jonathan. Hold on.
Hold on a second.
He loves me, guys. He loves me.
I'm sorry. This is your thing?
It is, yeah. So the question I wanted to ask Jonathan is, who's your favorite apostle and why is it Little James?
It's Matthew.
I thought this was like a raffle for a signature thing. I gotta go.
I have a spot right over here next to me. Okay. I love you. Anyway. So, I'm going to pass these out. Everyone's name is on all of those. So, pass those down. So, on these cards, we have all of our castmates' names that are up here, plus maybe a couple of other castmates, too. So, I'm going to pull out questions from this hat, and it's who is most likely to blank. Then, we all are going to pick the person in the stack that we think is most likely to do that thing. And then we're all going to reveal our answers and explain why we picked that person. Okay? So we have more microphones on this side, so I'm going to take one. We can share one. I'm going to pass one over here so y'all can have a microphone as well. First up,
we've got our duos.
Who is most likely to get away with murder? We can start down from... Okay, let's all reveal on the count of three. One, two, three, go. So who? We got Giovanni. We got Jonathan. Giovanni, Allah. So we're on the same page. Liz? Okay. We got Allah, Joey, Paris, and Allah. Okay. I think Allah we did because he's the martial artist, and he's the one that can most easily kill someone.
Hold on. Jordan, you said who would get away with it.
Get away with murder.
Exactly. Allah would be way too obvious.
I think he could get
away. If he murdered
with
someone,
it.
To be like, so no, his body's like off a bridge. That was Allah.
But he's also an international man of mystery. Right. I don't understand.
Wait a minute. He's because too sweet. Shahar's not here, but I really think we all could probably unanimously agree that it'd be Shahar.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. If he was here, I would have had his name in the stack. And
get,
yeah,
away
we
with,
him.
Get away with murder.
Allah and they would be a great team of like assassins.
Yes.
Yeah. Does anyone want to explain why did you pick yourself?
Well, I've been watching a lot of murder podcasts lately, listening to, and I have something of a criminal mind, but I use it for good.
Why did you pick Giovanni, George?
So Giovanni gets away with lots of things. He once stole my trailer, and nobody even knew that it had happened. And look at that smile. He just has that toothy grin. So unassuming. And he just maybe he would commit the act and just smile. And people are like, yeah, he's innocent.
I am a saint. But it might happen again.
I mean, I'd let him do it.
So
I'd probably let him just like murder me. Just like, dude, you're so nice. I mean, yeah. Go for it.
I would
probably
never.
Deserved it. I probably deserved it.
Ala, you picked did. Paris. Yeah. Can you explain the thought behind that?
Yeah. Well, I meant Matthew, because Matthew could do anything, the fans would still love him.
Okay.
So I think even murder would be easy.
Tyler and
you're
Dallas
forgiven.
Literally
said that. Yeah. We love you still.
Okay. And then someone said Joey. Why?
I didn't say Joey.
Someone said Joey. Oh, yeah, you said Joey.
Do we all naturally just think Joey would do it?
Joey?
Joey, he's just...
Looks like a killer.
I feel like he could get away with murder. Yeah, you just get right under the radar. I don't know.
Maybe.
Okay, I'm going to do another one. Let's see here. Next up we have... Who's most likely to run into a burning building to save someone? Everyone got their answers? Okay, let's reveal. I think so. Okay. Oh, look at that.
I mean.
Wow. Oh,
yeah. Okay. What? What's your say?
What?
Cool. So we got a lot of Allah again. Not only would he murder someone and get away with it, he'd also save someone.
He would murder someone and then go save them.
Just because he has the physical ability.
Yeah.
He's already there. He lit the fire.
It's fair. That's fair.
Stunt man.
He lit the fire to kill someone else, but he saved the other people. Yeah, that's
and he's just smiling. It's just like, dang, you're good,
that's
man.
That's a really hard one because every last one of these guys would run into a burning building to save everyone. They'd like build a ladder on top of each other to make sure they got it. So that's a really difficult question because every single one of them would do it.
It's kind of like saying who would dive into super cold water to save his friends. Like, and I'm like, you know, Jonathan would walk on the water.
Sure.
What would he do with the fire? Like, we would all get burnt, but I don't think he would. So.
Yeah. Well, and especially, I know some people said Jonathan. I feel like it's when he's in Jesus mode, like, he really embodies. The first time I met him, I was on set freezing, and he took off his jacket and put it on me, and he was backlit, and he was in his costume. And he's like, he kind of takes on that old persona. So I
love how they.
He's regretted it ever since.
Yeah. He hasn't gotten rid of me since. So, yeah.
Did they give him a jacket and not you a jacket? That's so unfair.
No, I was wearing a jacket. I was just cold, so he gave me his jacket.
So you were
well.
Being a hero. I get it.
I did, yes. Yeah. I sold it on eBay. Okay. Okay. And this one's very specific, and I know we're all going to say the same answer. Who's most likely to fart in the middle of a take?
Wow,
I'm calling someone out.
Difficult decision. Wow.
Okay, everyone, I know we all have our answers. Do we want to reveal the answer?
I mean, do we have to?
We
don't.
Do.
I don't know. We could just
Ready?
Leave that one.
One,
open.
Two, three, go. Luke.
It's not unanimous, so it can't be true.
Part of it is because they weren't there for this scene. So we were doing a scene, and I'm going to let Luke explain what happened. Luke, why don't you... tell these fine folks about this instance. This is his limp, by the way.
Hi, my name's Luke, and I fart on set.
Okay, so it was a very dramatic scene after a very long day, after lunch. Lunch, ladies and gentlemen. So,
Beans.
I was feeling some, you know, gastral anomalies. And I was thinking, you know what, it'll pass, it'll be silent, it'll be fine. They call action. I'm like, you know what, it's not gonna... And that wasn't as loud, it was louder, but I thought, you know what, it's fine, it's good, the scene's moving, and I look to my left, and all I see is Jordan losing his mind.
I was crying and trying to hold in this laughter. I have never laughed this hard in my entire life.
He looked like he was drowning.
Timing too. The fart came at the perfect time. They said, and action. And then, and so it was before anyone started talking, and I just kind of turned and closed my eyes, and I was chuckling, but I was like, don't make eye contact with anyone. And the camera was behind me, so I knew it didn't matter what my face was doing. But then I see Paris and Yoshi crying, laughing too. And then we could all hear each other, which made it worse. So sorry, continue.
By the way, it was so loud and out of order. I thought it was a chair scraping or something. Like, I didn't believe it. That's why I didn't laugh. I'm like, why are you guys laughing? That was a chair. No one would do that when they yell action.
It was like there's a certain tension that you feel when you know that in two pages you have to say one line, but you're like, I can't breathe right now. And so you just hear, the lines are getting closer, and you're like, I can't breathe. And Yoshi is like shaking behind me. And I just have to look in Jonathan's eyes like, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. And that was the whole, it was like a 10
minute. It's like a
10 minute
scene. Yeah. Well, we had been shooting this scene for days in the heat, and we're all sitting there, and there's tons of extras all around us too. And at the, like, there was moments where it would subside, and then I'd either see someone still laughing and it would come back, or I would think of it and start laughing again. And then as soon as they all cut, Dallas came over and he was crying laughing as well. And it's a dramatic scene too. It's not like it's like a scene where we can be laughing.
And so, also during the whole take, I think it was this thing of where like we didn't know who did it. So I thought it was Noah. Yeah. And then like everyone had his own interpretation of like, let's not look at that person or this person.
That's off to Luke, though, for immediately claiming it. Because a lot of people wouldn't. So
claim your farts, bro.
Yeah. So next up is, who is most likely to win a Grammy? And for those of you who don't know, Grammys are for singing. We all have our answers? Okay. One, two, three. Who do we got? You got Jordan, Noah, Amber, Noah, Liz, Noah, Amber, Jordan, Noah, and Allah is no one. Okay. So why Amber? A few other people said Amber. Who else said Amber? I think Amber. I haven't heard you sing. I just feel like you can sing. Yeah. Let's
sing.
Amber just
we went to karaoke one night, a few of us castmates.
That's right.
And Amber was able to belt out some songs.
My
and
intuition
we were like,
was right.
It's just
then.
The most technically brilliant voice in our cast.
I know.
Like it is.
Cool. Actually, it's Amber and Joey sang a song together.
What song was it?
What was that song?
I think it was Missy Elliott.
And it was incredible.
So what were the other answers we had?
Jordan,
Noah?
I put you because of season one. That
where I serenade Shahar, yeah. I'm waiting for a scene where I'm like, we're all at a campfire, and I start singing, and then it goes into like a montage of all these.
And then Luke farts.
And then Luke farts yeah. and ruins it. You said Noah. I think Noah, I could
yeah.
see that. Yeah.
I picked Noah too.
Yeah, oh a Tony. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm waiting for the R&B album to drop.
Whoa. That's yeah. very nice. I am sorry to say I will most certainly never win a Grammy, but I appreciate
if Austin
the
were here, though, I
yeah,
feel
totally.
Like that would
be...
Oh,
I said Liz, because yeah. I thought Liz would do like a spoken word poetry kind of like...
Ooh, yeah. yes.
Win one of those like underground
with
Grammys.
Like a little... what's yeah. the little French hat?
Yes.
I almost said a bidet.
It's the Grammys yeah. that...
With a little bidet on her head?
Like, no. Not... Close. Close.
Who's most likely to lead a protest?
Ooh.
That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, a protest.
What are we protesting?
Anything?
I'm going to protest to stop the Luke fart jokes because I think they've gone too far. Yep, there we go. Paris, you'll lead that, right?
Everyone got your answers? Yeah? Okay, one, two, three.
What?
Okay, yeah, a lot of Noahs, some Liz's. I could see both of those. You said Lada? Okay, explain.
You're so sweet, but there's this
feisty, powerful energy in you that, like, if you believe in something, I feel like you would be, like, at the front of the line, you know? Yeah. Definitely. I agree.
Who else? So Noah. I said Noah just because I know Noah's very outspoken about his beliefs and his stances, and I you're also the loudest of all of us.
That's definitely so true.
Pure you volume.
Yeah. You just, all you have to do is, like, use your loud voice, and I'm like, okay, cool, I'm on board, so, yeah.
I think this means we just need to do Les Mis, is what these last two questions are telling me. Now I understand, okay.
We got Paris and Liz as well. Why Paris and Liz?
Well, Liz here, same spoken word poetry sort of event. It's like a really peaceful protest, but I feel like Liz, in a similar way, we could do a kumbaya protest together, I think.
Yeah.
Totally.
Okay. What about Paris? What's your reasoning for Paris, Luke?
I honestly, Paris is such a nice guy, but if you've ever seen him angry, it's really...
You see me angry?
Have I not?
I tend to black out.
Oh, so oh, never mind. Never
Paris
mind. I'm terrified.
Protest on filming outside ever again. Paris leads that protest.
Paris is really because he's like smiling and really like happy, even if it's like so you can't even tell if you're like protesting something. You're just like you're trying to be really nice about it, so you wouldn't even tell that it's happening.
Yeah,
great,
yeah.
Great for a protest. By
I'd
the way.
Follow that.
Yeah, I'd follow myself. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Who is most likely to forget a line?
That's mean. I don't know. Oh, good. Then I'll pick you.
I have the correct answer, by the way.
Two. Whoa.
That's
not my answer.
Wait, I don't know if I want
to.
I saw yours, yeah.
That's the correct
answer. Okay. Everyone have their answers? Mine's, yeah. Jonathan, just because he has the most.
He has so many. It's not even fair.
What? Okay, why'd you say Joey, George?
So there's a little trick that actors do when they get their scripts, when they get sent to them months before shooting starts. They will control F their name. So Joey, for example, or command F, a lot of Apple users in here, you would just command F your name, and whenever Thomas comes up, you highlight it and you go, great, that's my line, and that's all you really care about. Now, Joey forgets that sometimes it says all... or all Americans, just basically everyone says that. And so we show up on set and it says all in brackets in prayer. And Joey's like, dude, what line is that? I didn't get given that line. It's because his name isn't in it. And it was a whole prayer. And so if you go to that scene, if you can look in the background, he's just like, yeah, where's the night is the prayer? It's like a whole song or something. Don't we all do some...
Joey, you know, we have one
with
of those
Gog
coming
and Magog
up soon.
Or something?
Yes.
We do have one coming up.
This week.
Yeah, oh, it's this week.
I think so.
Week? No. It's next week.
Tomorrow.
Next week.
Okay.
No.
But George is right. Yeah, there was a day where I had no idea that all of us were speaking. And even Dallas laughed at me at a certain point because we did it so many times. He's like, you still haven't memorized it yet? And I'm just like, no idea.
But then also, wherever the camera was, Joey would find a way to, like, put his back to the camera. Like, no matter what the coverage was, Joey was always facing a little bit away.
It's true. Oh, man. Okay, this is a good follow-up to that one, but who's most likely to arrive late on set?
Guys, I just showed up this season, man. I don't know.
Everyone got their answers?
No.
I'm just like assuming at this point.
One, two, three.
What?
Joey.
Is it Joey?
Paris?
That's true.
It happened once.
I'm sharing.
And that's why I'm putting it, because it's funny. It happened once, and it was just like, you're like, dude, I arrived late once, and now my call time's really early. Got, like, punished for one late arrival.
I honestly don't think Joey has done it more than once either, but this season he showed up late. What was the your alarm didn't go off? What happened?
Yeah, so my alarm did go off, and I hit snooze, and I trusted that I would be able to wake up. Didn't happen. I think it was, like, what, 2 hours late to... Was it 3 hours late? Yeah, 3 hours late to set. Apparently, they thought something bad had happened to me. So people were banging on my door, and I still didn't hear that at all. And then I get to set, and everyone was like, hey, man, how's it going? And then, you know, as the day goes on, people would make comments like, oh, you know, when you're a professional actor, you tend to show up on time and things like that. So well-deserved. Really, really, really fun day for me, you know?
Okay, here we go. Here's another one. I'll do a good amount more. Okay, here. Let's see. This is fun. I'm having fun. Who's most likely to make an inappropriate joke on set? Okay, 1, 2, 3. Reveal. A lot of Jordans.
Friends.
I see how it is. We got Joey and George. Yes. I think that's pretty accurate. Jordan, Joey, and George. Yeah, that's the top three. Yeah, okay, I agree. We don't need to even expand on that one.
You know what's funny? I think it's just us.
No, we don't know what's funny.
Yeah. You know what's funny? This inappropriate joke we told. No. There's been a time this season where you, me, and you have been probably telling inappropriate jokes to each other.
So I think so.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, we're the troublemakers. Okay, here we go. Now let's go to some nice ones again. Who's most likely to become president? We have our answers locked in.
You can tell the air got super serious.
I know.
Who's it going to be?
Jordan, Jonathan, Giovanni, Giovanni, Jonathan, Amber, Liz, Lotta, Giovanni, Giovanni. Wow.
Just do parliament.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, right? Who would vote for
Maybe
Giovanni?
Maybe we should get a senator representative.
There we go. I feel like he got the most. So why Giovanni?
He's so pretty. I mean,
Giovanni for president. You're just
so likable. Yeah, build bridges.
He's got the Italian vote, you know.
Right.
All the Italian college moms just love Giovanni, and that for sure will bolster your numbers.
Yeah.
Also, the non-Italian moms love Giovanni.
The non-Italian moms who just look at his photo.
And that is a rad thad. Rad thad 2024.
And the biceps as well, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, he's starting to give Shahar a run for his money with those biceps. Man. Okay. What about Lotta? Who picked Lotta for that one? Okay, explain.
Lotta, isn't it? Couldn't you? Not impossible. Wouldn't it be impossible? Could you be? Were you? No. I think Lotta wasn't.
What are you trying to say?
What are you trying to say, Noah?
You were born away.
I was born in Brazil, yes. Okay. I do have an American citizenship, so technically I could not be president.
But we can get rid of that rule.
Yeah, once you become president. I'd vote for her.
What? Yes.
I didn't mean to bring Lotta. I would
no,
vote for
no,
you.
No, I get it. I get it. Yeah, yeah.
I picked Lotta because she's a very, very nice person, and she's a very, very good listener as well. I think that's super important.
Yeah. I like it. Okay, we'll do a few more here. Let's see here. This one. Who is most likely to be found at Crafty, which is also where we have, like, our snacks on set? We locked in. Almost. Okay, and reveal. Paris, a lot of Paris.
Wow.
Got George and
I
Luke.
I like my coffee, guys.
Yeah, everyone's so like Paris, George, and Luke.
It's all your snacks, too.
I said Joey.
Oh, and Joey. Okay.
Paris and I will usually find ourselves at Crafty and just looking at each other like, what did you pick? And be like, I got some Cheez-Its. What about you? And then he'll show me like a stash of hot Cheetos. And we'll hide them in our bags and then just walk away without anybody seeing.
Yeah, I don't know. Paris is like a secret snacker. Like, hard time.
Can always count on Paris to like as someone to walk with to the Crafty truck. I'm just like, oh, Paris will definitely walk with me. And you just came back. You're like, yeah, I'll just go get another tea.
Who is most likely to cry on set?
For a particular reason, or
because someone was mean to them?
No, just like
no, it's not in the script. They're just really wimpish.
Just in general, like whatever, however you took it. You picked yourself, okay. Liz, Lotta, Jordan. Okay, I'll take it. Just because, yeah. I wouldn't be crying in the scene, I'd just be crying just because. Who is most likely to play a professional sport?
No
play a professional sport.
Does esports count?
Esports.
I don't. Oh, I'm stuck.
Oh. Okay. Reveal. Allah, George, Giovanni, Jordan, George, Noah. Okay. Yeah. We'll start down there. Noah. Why do you have Noah, Giovanni?
Because he's fast, man.
Man. Yeah,
every time I see him in the gym, he's on the treadmill, and he just, I don't know, I can't even run like half a mile, so I don't know how you do it. So I could just see him doing like some type of like marathon or something like that.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I would like to talk about Jordan here, because Jordan is a absolute madman. It will be 110 degrees. We're filming all day, and Jordan is out like ruining his wardrobe, sweating before we've even began because he's like throwing the frisbee, throwing a football, and we're like, dude, what is? I've said so many times, what is wrong with? Why are you doing this to start the day? And then he'll have to lie to the wardrobe people. He's always like, oh, I'm so sorry, like my stuff fell apart somehow. I have no idea how. And he's like rolling on. Yeah, that's why. I think Jordan.
I don't know what you're talking about.
There may or may not be wardrobe people on set. So.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I may have had to fix a tassel before.
She fixed a tassel for me. Yeah. Thank you for that. And then who else? Someone said George. I think George too.
We're all forgetting Mr. Liverpool himself. Look at
rugby
this guy.
Or soccer.
And
yeah.
George, you played soccer, right? You did.
Or football.
Yes. I played 15 minutes of a semi-professional game. I think they gave me like $10.
Hey, that's more than 10.
Player. So I just tell people that, yeah, it's professional. I got paid. So, yeah. But it was really, really low. It didn't really count. But anyway.
I picked Allah, and a couple other people did too, just because of, you know, he's the athletic freak of the show. Yeah, so.
Guy does one flip on screen.
The flips you do, you know why.
Can I just very quickly say there was just a moment where me and Abe are supposed to react to him working out or doing stuff, and Allah, like as another actor, you're supposed to give the other person as much as you can. Allah was doing these flips. I'm like, is that because I'd not even met you yet, and I saw this guy doing these. I'm like, is that a stunt? What is happening right now? It looked like a helicopter. It wasn't even a flip. It was a sideways up. And my face is like, I don't know if they use it in the shot, because I'm just like, this is unbelievable.
I think it's...
I was just trying to distract you on the take, on your close. I was trying to ruin your close-up, basically.
I was pleasantly distracted, don't worry.
Fans have, on social media, every now and then, especially last season, before anyone knew who Allah was playing, several people thought that it was me when they posted pictures of Allah. And, like, there's a picture of him taking down the possessed man, and they're like, why is little James tackling that guy? And I'm like, I'll take it. Maybe I'll tackle a guy in season 3. We'll see.
I mean, you could.
Yeah.
We all know you could. It's not that far off.
Okay, and then lastly, who's most likely to be the winning contestant on Survivor?
I can't answer this in
10 Is everyone ready?
Seconds. This means so much to me.
We got Allah. I got Noah, Lada.
Nice.
Allah.
Okay, let me explain why you're all wrong. Allah, I love you. You are a big target on Survivor, dude. They're coming for you because you're so athletic. So you'll take your tribe like to the merge, and then they're like, we got to get rid of Allah right away.
What?
Lada, however, Lada is very athletic and strong too, but also has a super strong social game, and she'll be like hiding, right? A sneaky contestant. And then it gets to like the final five, and they're like, we need to get rid of Lada, and then they can't. Therefore, welcome to my TED Talk.
I picked you for the
because
same reason.
Stubborn. That's a great quality.
I think I can say with absolute confidence now after that spiel, whoever voted for Noah was absolutely right. Yeah, no, you just made me feel a lot better about myself
this year for Survivor.
Okay, so now that's all of those questions. So give it up for all of the special guests. Okay. That was fun. Y'all can hang out for a bit, though. So before I have another sponsor to thank, so that Lone Star Garden, it's actually run by my mom. Hi, Mom, wherever you are. But It's a beautiful venue. It's where I got married. She does all sorts of weddings and parties and events there. It has a beautiful garden, all sorts of different locations for different things. So LoneStarGarden.com. You can also find it on the back of the program again and scan the QR code. If you have any special events coming up, I highly recommend it. But also, I have a final question for Liz and Paris here. But before I get to that, there are 10 stickers, What's Your Limp stickers, hidden under some of these seats in the audience. And so whenever you get up, if you look and see if you have a What's Your Limp sticker, then you will win an autographed picture from Liz Paris and I. Just find my mom in the lobby afterwards. She'll have them and bring the sticker to her, and she will give you an autographed picture. But lastly, so I always end the podcasts with this question. And after I ask this question, some of us will be hanging out on stage right here. And if anyone wants a picture, we do have to keep some distance because we're still filming and trying to, you know, keep some safe distance there. So if anyone wants a picture afterwards, if you line up on this side and come down, you can take a picture from down there and we'll be up on the stage right behind you. And if you want to help each other out by holding each other's phones to take pictures, and then you can move on down the other aisle. So anyway, last question. I would ask all of you, but those of you, I've already had Joey and Noah on my podcast and George, so they've already answered this question. And for those of you who haven't officially been guests, I'm waiting until your specific episodes to ask this question. So this will give you time to think about it. But Paris and Liz, since we talked a lot about our insecurities and the things that we've struggled with, I like to end on a positive note. So what is the thing that you love most about yourself?
I'm going to rephrase that and use it to say what I would tell my younger self, who I don't think I loved as much as I should have. And I just want to thank him for building me up to be who I am today. And yeah, that's what I would say.
That's a really good answer.
When you first asked me to like prepare me for it, it was immediate in my head that like my sense of humor has made the tough times all okay. You know, like it's a thing that like gets you through. But I'm realizing that that might be like a smaller part of something else, which is resilience. And I think a lot of us as actors have that. We need it. And I don't think I ever saw that that's what was in me to keep going forward. But I think that is my favorite part of myself is resilience.
I love that. And I want to say that, first off, I love every single one of you. All of you are, you know, my tribe. You're my pack. And I think Matthew Lillard, who's an actor, I heard on a podcast say, in this business, if you try to get through it alone, your odds of making it are a lot smaller. Whether it's like mental, you may still have a good career, but mentally it's really tough. There's a lot of stuff you go through and ups and downs. And he compared it to being a gazelle trying to cross the Sahara Desert. If you do it alone, you're most likely going to get eaten or die of thirst, or you're not going to make it to the other end. But if you do it with a pack, all of you are more likely to see the promised land. And I feel that way with all of you. It's been such a pleasure working with you all and getting to know you all and developing these deep connections and relationships with all of you. And I have so much respect and love for each of you as artists and as people. And, you know, we've all been there for each other through ups and downs and helped lift each other up and encourage each other and support each other. And all of you just being here means so much to me. So yeah, I love all of you so much. And thank you all for being the best friends I could ask for.
Okay, is there like a bug?
So, I also want to thank all of you. I love everyone that came here and watched the show tonight. Thank you for, again, being guinea pigs for my first ever live podcast show. I hope it was worth it. I had fun doing it. I hope all of you, whatever your specific limp is, can learn to love your limp a little bit more and accept the things that make you different. Because I think that those things should be celebrated. So thank you all so much for coming tonight. So that was my conversation with Liz and Paris, as well as my other chosen castmates, as you could hear at the end there. That was easily the most fun I've ever had doing a podcast, but it was also the scariest podcast I've ever done because we had about 300 people in the audience, and it was just so much pressure being the one that was in charge of all of it. It was months and months of work to put this all together, but it was so worth it, and I can't wait to do another one. I'm already brainstorming about what I can do to... I don't want to say top this one, but at least reach the same bar that we set with this one. Anyway, I hope all of you enjoyed this episode. I am so grateful for my chosen family. I genuinely have so much love and respect and admiration for each one of them. And I can't wait for you to hear all of my other interviews with my castmates that haven't been on the show yet in an official capacity. So I'm so excited to get them on very, very soon. And I can't wait to dive into what their respective limps are. Anyway, I am so grateful to all of you for listening and for supporting What's Your Limp. I don't know who I'm going to have for next week's guest, but I am planning on interviewing some of my chosen castmates. So in all likelihood, it will be one of them. So be sure to look out for that. And in the meantime, remember to love your limp, be good to yourselves, and y'all have a good one.